Today's show, we're starting off show forecast. So here we go. Starting off, there's many myths and stories, like Noah's Ark, about a great flood happening. We discuss whether a great flood actually happened. Afterwards, meteorologists turn their attention towards a historic storm impacting Australia. Then, another historic storm impacting the southern states of America, involving a Gulf of Mexico winter storm. And if we have time, since we are starting about half an hour late, to end the show off, I'm going to be reading a couple letters of fan mail I've received over the last few weeks that I never got time to read. And, of course, as always, your weekly forecast and Liam's locked-in forecast for the end of the week. So, weather recap. All right. Weather recap, you know, it was a nice and simple week for winter. You know, you had some snow, some cold temperatures, you know. Like I said, an average winter week. Of course, without the polar vortex, it's average, you know. Like I said, it is freezing outside. Like minus 30 without the wind chill. Learn that terminology. You know, all broadcast meteorologists, they say minus, for example, minus 30 instead of negative 30. Learned that terminology recently. You know, like I said on last show, I can't remember the last time Ontario got this kind of cold weather. So I Googled it. Supposedly, it's been 7 whole years. Last time we got minus 20 to minus 25 or minus 30 degree weather with the wind chill was supposedly in 2018. And I know it does not sound real that 2018 was 7 years ago, but mind-blowing. That's how long it's been. You know, I've said it once, I said it before, and I said it many times. I am a huge, big winter fan, specifically for the snow, though. I gotta clarify that now. After enduring this awful, awful, awful cold front with the polar vortex, I think it's important to note I only really like it for the snow. I'm not a fan of this cold weather, man. It's like daggers. It's just so dry, like stabs you. It's such a sharp and dry cold. It feels awful to be in. Like the other day when I was walking to class at night, when the wind is blowing against you, like it's blowing in your face, it's so bad. Like when I got back to my dorm, I couldn't even feel my face. It's so cold outside, man. Ugh. Worst of all, from my place where, my residence, it's a 15-minute walk over to the radio station this morning. All in the dry, sharp cold. Great Wednesday morning so far, even with technical difficulties, though. Because I get to be here yapping about weather for the next hour and a half, though. We ended up getting a smaller system last Thursday that dropped a few centimeters all over Ontario, no, some more than others. I saw what it looked like in the GTA, though, and it was straight out of some, Hallmark Christmas movie or something like that. Big, you know, I had, the big fluffy snowflakes falling down. It's like a perfect winter scene. Saw pictures of it. Ooh, man, it looks so good. Looks so pretty. Love that stuff. We got a small system on Sunday as well with a winter travel advisory in effect. For Sunday evening, it was. It wasn't anything major, you know. It was just a strong band of snow passing through the region. Ended up causing heavy snow at times during the evening, but it passed through the morning. Passed by the morning, my bad. You know, nothing out of the ordinary to report. Like I said, it's been the simple and freezing week. I was back in Mississauga briefly this weekend, and I can say without a doubt, still, they get the better temperatures. I miss minus 10 degree weather deeply. And as of right now, we are under an extreme cold warning. It's going to end later this morning, so it should be lifted by the time the show is done. We're looking at wind chill values near minus 30 and as low as minus 35. Just wanted to put that out there. On to the forecast accuracy. Now, as always, forecast was very well done last week, mostly due to the fact that there weren't many active storms happening. My weekly forecasts are always better when it's more like basic week, simply because there's less to forecast. Temperatures were great. We didn't really see sun for a while as the forecast predicted. It was mainly cloudy. Some sparse sun here and there. Like yesterday, I know yesterday was partly cloudy. We had some sun, but it was mostly cloudy throughout the week. And overall, it was accurate. Stormwatch also ended up being right with the timing. My Stormwatch from last week. Model seemingly agreed on the Canadian model, though, as Southern Ontario did end up getting that weekend system. But it was on the weaker side. It got a few centimeters, but not many. I will say, though, considering we got a smaller system last Thursday, I have no clue how models never picked up on the system on that one. But I guess weather models can't pick up everything. Before going on break, though, I do have a special announcement. I would like to announce that we have an official Instagram page now. You can follow me at WeatherAwareLiam, that is WeatherAwareLiam, no spaces, on Instagram. I have no clue how the username WeatherAware was taken at all, and I search it up. It's so annoying. The account is inactive. Like, you search up WeatherAware, it's this guy with, like, that gray profile. He has one follower. He has one follower, and he's following the guy. The same person. Would have loved to have WeatherAware as my tag, but WeatherAwareLiam is good. I like it. It's close enough. Anywho, I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to use the Instagram page for yet, but as of now, I'm currently thinking, you know, maybe updating you guys with storms I mentioned on the show, behind-the-scenes looks, maybe reposting small clips of past episodes for those who missed it. Other things, you know, a video is going to be going up later today. I would have had it recorded by now, but I was dealing with technical issues for the past, like, half hour, so it's going to be video, you know, a little greeting video is going to go up on the page later today, showing the studio, that kind of stuff. But, yeah, you know, I think it's mainly good to have the Instagram page, not only for a great portfolio piece, but it helps me keep you guys weather aware with certain, like, storm watches and stuff. Like, the last week, right, I mentioned to stay up to date with your local weather services, to see which path the weather models follow. That Instagram page can be your local weather service. If you want updates on storms and stuff, you can just check the Instagram page. You know, there's not a storm happening this week. There's no storm watch, as mentioned. So we'll see what happens with the Instagram page. But I think it's good. I think it's a really good idea. It was suggested by a listener, and I like it. I like the idea. It's also good to have an Instagram page if I ever depart from the morning show. That way, it's there already. I have a follower building, and then I can tell you guys, hey, you can find me now on here at this time on this date, that kind of stuff, right? Like, I think it's a good idea. It's also a good way if you guys have any questions, if you guys want to, like, discuss anything I talk about in the show, you can always send me a DM at the account. You know, I like it. It's a good idea. I think it is, at least. Gonna go on a short break now. It's currently 10:41, minus 17, and cloudy in Waterloo, Ontario. Welcome back from the break, and welcome back to Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show. Noah's Ark is a fairly well-known biblical story. You know, I think it's one of the more popular ones. It's parodied in a lot of pop culture. My favorite has to be the three-part special American Dad had on Noah's Ark. Really funny stuff. If you don't know the story, though, don't worry. Don't fret. I will briefly recount it. God was angry with the sins of humanity and decided to flood the earth, making it rain for 40 days and 40 nights. He told Noah to take his family and two of every animal on earth, one female and one male. They all survived, and at the end of the flood, Noah sent a dove and a raven to see if land could be found. A little bit later, land was found, everyone left the ark and repopulated the earth, and God promised to never flood the earth again, using a rainbow as a symbol of his promise. Great stuff. You know, that's it's a great story. And what's interesting to me is that a lot of other religions tell a similar tale. If not specifically about the ark itself, most religions and other old myths tell a story of some great flood that ravaged the earth, killing all but a few individuals. Here's a few of them. I got three of them. Here's a few of them that I found interesting. One of the earliest examples of this myth can be found in Mesopotamian precursors, supposedly being what Noah's Ark is based on. There's 9 versions, but the closest is the Epic of Gilgamesh. In it, the supposed Great Flood is a catastrophic event that destroys most of humanity, sent by the gods to deal with overpopulation. The flood lasts for 6 days and 7 nights. The god Ea warns Utnapishtim about the flood and tells him to build a boat. And with this knowledge, he, along with family, servants, and animals, survive. Just like Noah's Ark, he sends a dove and a raven along with a swallow to look for land. This story is then told to Gilgamesh as a way for Gilgamesh to learn how to escape death. Since then, many other texts have foretold some kind of great flood. In the philosopher Plato's Timaeus, written in 360 BCE, it describes a similar flood myth. Zeus, all high and mighty, gets annoyed by the bronze race of humans, specifically at their constant warring. He punishes humanity with a great flood. During all that, the Titan Prometheus, who made humans from clay, tells the secret plan to Deucalion, telling him to build an ark in order to be saved. After 9 days and nights, the water recedes and the ark lands on a mountain. Obviously, this is Greek mythology, but, you know, it's nothing new. Zeus is always pissed about something, and he wants to take out his anger on humanity. That's how most of these stories with Zeus goes that I find. The last one. In the Hebrew Genesis, the god Yahweh, who made man out of the dust of the ground, decides to flood the earth because of the corrupted state of mankind. However, he warns our buddy Noah, that Noah, about it, and gives him instruction to build an ark. Noah, his family, and representatives, whatever that means, of each animal on earth enter the ark. And you know the rest, pretty much, you know. All life outside the ark dies. They end up surviving the flood. Anyone that's on the ark, Yahweh promises that he will never judge earth with a flood again, and he makes a rainbow as a symbol of his promise. See how similar Noah's ark is between religions? You know, now, don't get me wrong at all. These are all really, like, they're really fascinating to me. Like, my communications courses really opened my eye to these old myths and tales, biblical stuff. My professor was really, really adamant with that kind of stuff. But, you know, I really, really love it, especially Greek mythology. I think that's probably honestly my favorite mythology. But with all that being said, again, those are just a select handful of stories. There's hundreds of other myths and stories that foretell a flood. Why is it such a common theme amongst these sacred texts? Was there actually a great flood? So, you know, first off, to be completely crystal clear, no. There was not a great flood that covered the entire earth. Did not happen. There is no physical or empirical evidence to suggest a flood covered the entire earth and killed everyone but Noah and his family and one of every animal from the time. And this is just personal judgment, but I think everyone would look really similar to each other if that was the case and everyone would be related. I'm just saying that. But with that being said, there is evidence that supports a large regional flood being the supposed Great Flood. So there's two rivers, the Euphrates and the Tigris. They flow through Mesopotamia, which is now known as the country of Iraq. There are several layers in exposed rocks near those two rivers in southeastern Mesopotamia, Iraq, that are likely flood deposits. Most are about a foot thick, about 0.3 meters, but one is as much as 3 meters thick. Flood debris from the same thick deposit along the Euphrates River near the ancient Sumerian city of Shuprak, about 200 kilometers southeast of Baghdad, has been dated by the C14 method, giving an age of 2900 BCE. Flood deposits 2.4 meters feet thick are also reported as far northeast as the ancient Babylonian city of Kish, 120 kilometers south of Baghdad. At any rate, the many flood deposits layers show that flooding in southeastern Mesopotamia was not unusual in ancient times. It's worth noting that similar large local floods are common throughout history around the world. For example, monsoon storms in Bangladesh frequently produce a lot of rain over the country and in the Himalayas, which rise in the northern part of the country. Runoff of water from the rain and melting snow during such storms create great floods in four rivers that converge in the Wang River, which then drains into a huge delta in the Bay of Bengal. Thousands of people have been drowned in this delta region by many such floods during the last century, so almost every culture throughout history has a flood story to tell. But in each of these times and places, the floods would have been local and not worldwide. Many creationists have also pointed out that the Bible indicates that God promised not to cause another huge flood to occur, and therefore there cannot be any floods that are similar to the Noachian flood, which is the quote-unquote great flood foretold in Noah's Ark. Therefore, the geological record should show at least one unique flood event that is different from all the large regional floods, which there is geological evidence for that. So, with all that being said, if the 3.4 meter thick layer of flood deposits in southeastern Mesopotamia represents a huge flood of ancient times, and if the remnants of one described in the ancient times, early Babylonian epics, then the authors of these epics were likely survivors who lived in a village on natural leaves on the lower parts of either the Euphrates or Tigris rivers where the floodwaters covered their village. Natural leaves and adjacent floodplains for distances of 160 to 320 kilometers so that no land could be seen and their whole world would have been underwater. So, that's the main scientific answer. I personally believe in it. You know, it's really interesting to me how you can date all this stuff back that far. And again, there isn't really evidence for a massive flood that covered the entire earth, but considering all that evidence, it's only rational to assume that these stories were told from personal experience of their own villages getting flooded. If it's a large regional flood, all you'd see is this water. All you'd see is the flood. It would have to be this great flood. So that makes sense to me. You know, I like it. But there's a few other theories that explain the Great Flood, and I'm going to be telling you two of them that popped out the most to me. So, first off, the theory says that the floods were caused by the last glacial period. Sorry, floods caused for the last glacial period are speculated to have inspired these myths. Plato's allegory of Atlantis is set over 9,000 years before his time, which may suggest that a Stone Age society lived close to the Mediterranean Sea and got wiped out by the rising sea levels, which may have laid the groundwork for a story of a great flood. My personal favorite theory, and the last for today's show, last theory for today's show, is from archaeologist Bruce Mass. Bruce suggests that some narratives in the Great Floods discussed in these sacred texts around the world may be linked to an oceanic asteroid impact that occurred between Africa and Antarctica around the time of a solar eclipse that caused a tsunami. Now, keep in mind, he studied many, many of these sacred texts. And in these texts, he found that 14 flood myths all refer to a full solar eclipse. These indications and other findings that he found, according to Bruce at least, point to the date May 10th, 2807 BC. With this in mind, he says that a meteor supposedly crashed into the Indian Ocean around 3000 to 2800 BCE and created the 29-kilometer wide undersea Burkle crater, which is a thing. That is a thing, generating a massive tsunami that flooded coastal islands. And survivors from those coastal islands ended up telling the story of some great flood. And again, you know, there's a vast variety of these theories explaining the floods and a lot more myths of these floods. I've said it, but like I only picked a select few that popped out to me, more than others, because there's just so many to pick. If I were, I could tell you all of them, but we'd be here for like 4 hours. There's so many. I was shocked, honestly, to find out how many myths or stories of a great flood there is. You know, personally, I think if there was a giant flood that covered the earth, there would be a lot of evidence left over. A lot of physical evidence. Like, think about dinosaurs, for example. You have the fossils left behind after extinction. You can prove they existed because of those fossils. I think, again, if there was this massive flood, you'd need to find the leftover evidence somehow. You know? But nonetheless, it's still a really interesting myth to me. And best part about these kind of myths is that you can have an opinion about it. Do you think a massive flood ravaged the earth? You can always DM me at WeatherAwareLiam on Instagram. Again, that's WeatherAwareLiam on Instagram. If you want to discuss this stuff, I'd love to discuss this. You know, I find all this stuff just really interesting. And if you find it interesting too, I'd love to have a conversation about it, you know? Maybe we can set up some way you can... I have two mics here. Maybe I can set up a way for you to have a live conversation with me on the air. Who knows? Welcome back from the break. And welcome back to Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show, as always. Seems like we can't go a week in 2025 without something catastrophic happening somewhere weather-wise. First 2 weeks, Los Angeles was literally on fire. Still an ongoing situation. But now, a historic storm has hit Australia. Specifically, the Sydney and New South Wales area. I call it the Sydney Storm, but that just kind of sounds like the lost fifth member of the Fantastic Four or something. Anyways, what is the storm? Because I just heard about it. I was sent it a few days ago, and it's insane. You'll find out. So, last week, starting Wednesday and ending over weekend, as in like 3 days ago that weekend, a variety of weather phenomena hit Australia. So much that I was able to create a list. Thunderstorms ravaged the east coast. A tropical cyclone formed near the west coast. A severe heat wave impacted areas of Queensland and Western Australia. Heavy rainfall caused floods across the New South Wales coast and with evacuation orders to the residents of Ferndale Caravan Park. And to top it all off, the cherry on top, an earthquake struck. Australia is in shambles. Now, before going into the storm itself, I'm going to explain what a tropical cyclone is, right? Because I haven't covered it before. And it's important you know what it is before I actually start talking about it in the context of the storm. So, tropical cyclone is a large air mass that rotates around a strong center of low atmospheric pressure. Adding on to that, as a spiral arrangement of thunderstorms and squalls that come with it, as well as strong winds. I don't really have to go further. If this sounds familiar, that's because, depending on the location and strength, a tropical cyclone can be called a hurricane, a typhoon, and everything in between. To pretty much TLDR, to explain it in English, a tropical cyclone is a fancy name for a hurricane. Depends on the strength and location, but it has the same qualities as a hurricane. It was clearly not strong enough to be classified as one, because if it was, it wouldn't be called a tropical cyclone. It'd be called a hurricane. But it, again, has the same qualities as a hurricane. It's like its fraternal twin. It's like it's a hurricane's fraternal twin, pretty much. I mentioned squalls as well. Squalls are pretty much quicker but more intense thunderstorms. Not to say thunderstorms on its own can't be intense. I'm not saying that at all. Squalls are more so rounds of quick-moving but strong thunderstorms that produce heavy rain, bad winds, lightning, sometimes bad winds, and, again, everything in between. Think of squalls like those flash storms in the summer. You know, those quick 10-minute storms when you get really hard rain and the skies get dark and stuff. But again, after 10, 15 minutes, it clears up. That's kind of what squalls are, but it's rounds of that. It's usually a long line of thunderstorms. It's like kind of like that. It's a rolling system of thunderstorms on and off, and they're quick. Now, something to note, if you didn't know, is Australia is flipped compared to our climate, if you didn't know, you know. So that's why they have a cyclone right now. When we have our hot summers, Australia endures a cold and brutal winter. But when we have to endure a cold and brutal winter, Australia goes through their summer season. Honestly, it might be a solid idea to travel there now if you're sick of the cold. Or maybe a few days later. You know, check the weather for Australia before traveling. How about that? We'll leave it there. If you want to get away from the cold to Australia, check the weather. So, that's why a cyclone is able to form. Right now, it's summertime over there. So, now that that's out of the way, what actually happened? So, this all started on Wednesday as a result of a cold front. This goes for either cold or warm fronts, but I'm going to use cold front as the example as it's relevant to the Australia storm. Cold fronts tend to cause storms a lot because they force warm and moist air to rise, which causes thunderstorms. Cold fronts move in fairly quickly, thus causes a dive in temperatures fairly quickly. It just creates an unstable environment, and yeah. This cold front specifically caused a massive line of thunderstorms. At one point, it spanned more than 1,500 kilometers. Specifically, it extended from the Queensland border down to Tasmania. I didn't know Australian geography, so I Googled it. Did you know that Tasmania is a separate island from Australia, but it's still part of that country? Kind of like how Hawaii is a separate island from America, but it's still part of the country as a state? I had no clue. I thought Tasmania was like a city or something like that. The Queensland border, to be specific about Tasmania, by the way, it's a smaller island than Australia, right off the shore from Melbourne. The Queensland border is in northern Australia, meaning you had a line of storms that was almost as long as Australia itself. And I say that as in, if you look at a map and look how like the length of Australia on a world map, that's roughly how long this line of thunderstorms was. These thunderstorms ended up causing bad winds, heavy rain, and lots of lightning. One person died after a tree struck their car, unfortunately. Now, when I say lots and lots of lightning, I don't mean that lightly. Between midday and midnight on Wednesday, a total of 73,700 lightning strikes were detected within a 100-kilometer radius of the Sydney Central Business District. Now, that's insane alone. But what I'm about to say will make that look like rookie numbers. Between 8 a.m. Wednesday and 8 a.m. Thursday, 24 hours. 1,819,000 lightning strikes were recorded from Queensland to Tasmania. From that entire long line of thunderstorms, almost 2 million lightning strikes were detected and recorded. Yeah. You heard me right. Almost 2 million. That is unheard of. It's overall just an insane metric. But some specific stories and damages of the storm include the following. Amongst the aforementioned 73,700 lightning strikes, one of them struck the Crown Casino in Barangaroo. Swear to God, these are real town names. They sound like Pokemon names. I know. It's ridiculous. I know Canada has some ridiculous town names. But Barangaroo? What are we doing here? Anyway, lightning strike punctured the roof of the casino and allowed heavy rain to come in. An entire roof was ripped off of a house in northwest Sydney, and it smashed into the house next door, causing 14 people total to look for temporary housing because both their homes were badly damaged. Can you imagine that? The house next to you has its roof ripped off, and what are the chances that the roof knocks into your house? Smashes into your house. The entire roof. That's just bad luck. A power line broke off and hit a home, which then caused a fire and completely destroyed the home located in New South Wales. In Dubbo, again, real town name, Dubbo, lightning struck a tree, which ignited a leaking gas pipe. In total, close to 300,000 homes in total have lost power, though most of them have, thankfully, regained power. Thursday afternoon, a weather warning was issued to residents between Tweedheads and Nimbin, again, real places, warning them to stay inside due to damaging winds and large to giant hailstones. That's a direct quote. That's the thunderstorm itself. But, as I mentioned, there's a cyclone and an earthquake. What's up with that? So, tropical cyclones, Sean, I know, very threatening. It was very rude of me not to say its name. So, tropical cyclone, Sean. I'm shivering thinking about cyclone Sean. Originally formed over the Pilbara coast on Thursday afternoon and ended up being upgraded to a Category 2 cyclone with sustained winds of 100 kilometers per hour and gusts reaching speeds of 140 kilometers per hour. Overnight Saturday into Sunday, the cyclone battered Australia's north coast, bringing gale-force winds and heavy rain across Wim Creek to Ningaloo. Yeah, real names again. Including Karratha, Dampier, Onslow, and Exmouth. I swear there's a Pokemon named Dampier. That sounds familiar. That sounds familiar. That has to be a Pokemon. The strongest wind gusts recorded were 113 kilometers per hour of sustained winds. Due to how it happened overnight, an emergency warning was issued on Sunday morning, which told residents from Barrow Island to Ningaloo to shelter in place as it was too late to evacuate. Again, because of the fact that the cyclone hit at night when everyone was sleeping, it was too late for anyone to evacuate. So they just told them, stay in the safest part of their buildings. Meanwhile, in southwestern Australia's wheat belt, an earthquake happened. At about 11:15 a.m. on Saturday in Meckering, an earthquake happened about 5 meters below ground, causing tremors spanning across areas from Mundaring to Meckering. What are these names? This was supposedly an aftershock from a 1968 hurricane that hit the exact same region for 40 seconds, reaching a 6.5 on the Richter scale. Means it was just kind of fairly intense. The new earthquake had a 3.5 on the Richter scale, meaning it wasn't too intense. No, it wasn't too intense, but it was there. It was noticeable. You can interpret this however you want, but to me, I think we're finally starting to see some of the effects of climate change. And unfortunately, this kind of stuff is just going to continue if nothing changes. It's really fascinating to report on and to see, especially with that historic lightning amount. I mean, almost 2 million lightning strikes across that entire squall of thunderstorms. That is insane, man. That is insane. But at the end of the day, it is a danger. If we aren't going to change anything, I think we have to at least make sure at the bare minimum we start to get prepared for more of these weather outbreaks. With that being said, we're going to go on a short break now. It's currently 11:19, minus 16, and cloudy in Waterloo, Ontario. Welcome back from the break, and welcome back to Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show. So as I mentioned in the previous segment, Los Angeles was on fire last week. What's next for crazy American weather, right? What's next? This week, the wacky world of America, the states of Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, and Mississippi are all under states of emergencies due to a historic winter storm forming in the Gulf of Mexico, or soon to be Gulf of America. You may recall last week that I briefly mentioned America would receive the same polar vortex we received that made it so unbearably cold this week. Turned out to be a much bigger problem than I could have ever anticipated. Anyone could have ever anticipated. What ended up happening with the polar vortex is that it's made its way through southern Ontario, then expanded into the eastern states before swinging down towards the southern states. With the cold temperatures across the coastside cities, it paved the road for a perfect winter storm setup. A low-pressure system formed in the Gulf, but with the cold temperatures, what would have been some heavy rain turned into a heavy snow winter storm. Thus, the winter storm formed in the Gulf, and posed a threat to the southern states near the Gulf. The main risks include generally a winter remix of snow, sleet, and freezing rain. Snow totals as of writing this, we're between 7 and 15 centimeters all across the board, but a lot of places have overachieved that. A lot of places. Like, last time I checked, Louisiana had 25 centimeters on the ground. Can you believe that? Louisiana, of all places. Sorry, New Orleans, which I think is in Louisiana. I don't know American geography well, but New Orleans specifically, whether it's a state or a city in Louisiana, I don't know for sure, but they got 25 centimeters. So, but with the general assumption that it's 7 to 15 centimeters with the wintry mix, I know what you're thinking. Doesn't sound like anything too crazy, and to us Canadians, it is nothing. Nothing too crazy. The storm itself, objectively, with the general totals of 7 to 15 centimeters in the wintry mix, isn't anything too out of the ordinary. But with the right context, it is a really, really bad snowstorm. The major issue with the storm is simply that those southern states down near the Gulf don't have the infrastructure at all for winter storms. And nor should they. By no means am I blaming them. No one is. They are all used to warm temperatures and rainstorms. So the money that, let's say, Ontario might have used on snow plows, those cars that salt the roads, and other systems to prepare for winter storms was rather used in areas like hurricane relief and like normal storm preparations, because that's what the states are used to. With that in mind, anytime states like Texas or Louisiana get some form of a winter system, the state goes into a state of emergency and everything just kind of shuts down because they don't really have a lot of precautionary measures to deal with the storm. This actually happened 3 years ago, soon to be four in 2021, with the exact same setup. The southern states, specifically Texas, which I can find got the worst of it, got hit with freezing temperatures, minus 18 with the wind chill, which is freezing for Texas. I'd take minus 18 right now, any day of the week, but for Texas, that is freezing cold, and it allowed for a winter storm to hit Dallas. The storm was especially bad because even in Canadian standards, it was pretty bad. It dropped about 28 centimeters of snow in Texas, of all places, which is a usually hot state. Now, Ontario, somewhere like Ontario, for example, would be able to respond to this because we are used to that kind of weather and are prepared for it. Dallas wasn't prepared for the cold front and winter storm. It caused residents to have more demand for heating in their houses, and it was so much demand that the power grids couldn't take it and they failed, leaving 4.5 million people without power in a blizzard with awful temperatures. The two electricity reliability commissions had to order rolling blackouts for 14 states amid the temperatures to try and manage the strain on the power grids in Texas. A blizzard, dropping roughly 28 to 30 centimeters, shut down the entire state of Texas, caused rolling blackouts for 13 other states, 14 including Texas, because the power grids weren't equipped to handle that much of a demand for heat. Ice from the storm also ended up leaving roads literally impossible to use because they didn't have proper ways to salt the roads. It was just a nightmare for Texas. Many people and animals ended up getting injured or worse because they're not used to cold temperatures. They're used to hot temperatures. Many didn't have the right clothing for winter simply because they never expected to need it, so they never bought it. You know, I'd like to imagine that since then, Texas is a little more prepared for winter storm than last time. At least, like, if this new winter storm hits them really badly, I do hope that this entire state doesn't end up getting shut down like last time. Because they've already lived through a winter storm like that. And hopefully they have some plows, or at least road salts, or at the bare minimum, or more plows, more road salts. And at the bare minimum, the power should have been upgraded to withstand these kinds of temperatures. Or, to be more specific, withstand that much of a demand for heat. And again, you know, it's not like it's their fault at all for not being prepared. By no means is anyone blaming these southern states. If you're living in a climate where you usually receive warmer temperatures, rainstorms, and the occasional hurricane risk, it would be stupid to invest a lot of money into winter storm preparations simply because these storms are once in a blue moon. These are very rare occurrences. I think maybe it's time to invest in some kind of winter preparation, whether it be more warming stations in the event of a cold front, more plows and road salts, or whatever works. The winter storm from the Gulf of Mexico is set to break records set decades ago, already breaking the record for all-time recorded snowfall amount for Florida, and possibly rivaling records from the late 1800s. In 1899, there was, quote-unquote, the Great Arctic Outbreak of 1899, also known as the St. Valentine's Day Blizzard. Temperatures were reportedly minus 17 with the wind chill, or without the wind chill. Just minus 17, that's my bad, just minus 17 Celsius. Flurries were reported in areas like the New Orleans up to Tampa, whereas areas like North Carolina reported snow amounts of up to 30 centimeters. Miami recorded temperatures of minus 1 on Valentine's Day, while Tallahassee, kind of better than Australia's naming, I'll say that much, recorded temperatures of minus 5. The only time that sub-zero degree Fahrenheit temperatures were recorded. The hard thing with the storm specifically is that a lot of the records it might have set ended up going unnoticed because forecasting wasn't really a thing back then. So there's a solid chance that the storm made more records than it actually did. Separate from this, 10 years prior, there was the Great Blizzard of 1888. This one turned out to be the one that set most of the records. It's weirdly difficult to see find out which one it is because both of them are pretty big. But we're just going to talk about both of them. One of the most severe blizzards in American history, it quote-unquote paralyzed the East Coast from Chesapeake Bay to Maine. Anywhere from 25 to 147 centimeters of snow fell in parts of New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. You had winds of up to 72 kilometers per hour, which allowed for harsh blizzard conditions. Interestingly enough, the storm was a normal rainstorm before temperatures rapidly dropped from 1 degree Celsius to minus 13. Honestly, would not be shocked if a flash freeze happened, which, FYI, is when temperatures drop so rapidly and so quickly that when it rains, wet surfaces freeze over, creating icy conditions on sidewalks and roads. Whenever we're at risk of this, you'll see a flash freeze warning coming up on any weather app you use, which is, again, when temperatures drop so rapidly that wet surfaces freeze over like that. Trains and roads were shut down for days, taking just over a week to clear the conditions and have safe traveling again. Telegraph infrastructures, yes, it's that old telegraph infrastructures, were disabled. Which, if you don't know what a telegraph is, Dr. Andrew Herman teaches a great class about that and more in media history. Talks a lot about Josh Richards, some TikToker from Canada. There's many, many more damages, but to focus on the records themselves, it was one of, if not the snowiest blizzards in American history, with 127 centimeters. Let me just double check this. 147 centimeters, that's a typo, with 147 centimeters, holds the record for the most snow, oh, my bad, with 127 centimeters, it holds the record for the most snowfall in New York City history, minus 34 degrees in some areas, likely setting records for coldest recorded temperatures. As mentioned, it caused a long delay for transportation and telegraph services. Over 400 people died due to the blizzard, unfortunately. It holds the record for the longest duration of blizzard conditions, which is a record I, for some reason, did not think was a thing. Again, like the 1899 blizzard, a lot of records remain undetermined or unrecorded because of the forecasting. Just again, simply because of the fact that forecasting was not really a thing back then. You know, you had technologies like the storm glass. Wonder what the storm glass said for this blizzard. Wonder what. We're going to go on a short break now. It is currently 11:36, minus 15, and cloudy in Waterloo, Ontario. Welcome back from the final break of today's show. Don't worry, we had to cut a segment, but don't worry. Next episode, we'll read some fan mail. Technical difficulties did not allow it for this episode, but another benefit to next week's episode, some fan mail. Welcome back to Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show. So, you know the drill. We're at the home stretch. Home stretch of today's episode. Don't cry. Don't cry. We're going to be back next week. Still got to get through the next 20 minutes or so. So we're going to give you your forecast. My locked-in guarantee. Laurier news segment. And of course, we'll have to see what the Mystic Stormglass says for today. So, forecast past the week. Yeah. I got to change that. Forecast for the end of the week. Huh, got to change that. Anyway, nothing is 100% with the future forecast, hence why I'm only giving a basic overview. Especially for the latter of these days, it is subject to and is likely going to change. Saturday, January 25th, you're looking at a high of minus 5, low of minus 6, and cloudy. Sunday, January 26th, you're looking at a high of minus 4, low of minus 10, and cloudy. Moving into next week, Monday, January 27th, you're looking at a high of minus 5, low of minus 8, and mostly cloudy. Tuesday, January 28th, you're looking at a high of minus 3, low of minus 5, and cloudy. And a week from today, Wednesday, January 29th, you're looking at a high of minus 1. Low of minus 7, and cloudy. That's your week. Again, freezing cold. Not as cold as it's going to be right now, but still pretty cold. So make sure you're bundled up. Liam's locked-in guarantee forecast for the end of the week. Let's get into it. Today, we're looking at a high of minus 12, low of minus 13, and cloudy. This morning, it was freezing cold. Freezing my britches off. 8 a.m. minus 23 feels like minus 30 and partly cloudy. In about 15 minutes, it'll be minus 15, feels like minus 24 and cloudy. 5 p.m. feels like it's going to be minus 13, feels like minus 22 and cloudy. And at 10 p.m., it'll be minus 12, feels like minus 20, and there's a risk of some snow tonight. Thursday, you're looking at a high of minus 6, low of minus 14, and cloudy. 8 a.m., it's going to be minus 10, feels like minus 16, and cloudy. 12 p.m., it'll be minus 8, feels like minus 15, and cloudy. 5 p.m., it'll be minus 7, feels like minus 13, and cloudy. And at 10 p.m., tomorrow night, minus 10, feels like minus 16, and cloudy. Friday, end of the week, we can start winding down. You're looking at a high of minus 7, low of minus 14, and cloudy. 8 a.m., it's going to be minus 13, feels like minus 16, mostly cloudy. 12 p.m., it'll be minus 8, feels like minus 14, and mostly cloudy. 5 p.m., it'll be minus 10, feels like minus 16, mostly cloudy. And 10 p.m., it'll be minus 13, feels like minus 20, and partly cloudy. So, as you can see, the cold is finally starting to dwindle out. It's finally starting to little inklings, little tiny bits. But it's better than nothing. You know, I take minus 20 over minus 30 any day of the week. Quick overview for my Mississauga listeners. I'm still very jealous of your temperatures, but not as much as last week. Gonna be cold today. Gonna be freezing cold. Starting the morning off with minus 28 with the wind chill, but by bedtime, it'll be minus 16 with the wind chill. My verdict, stay inside if you don't have to go outside today. Thursday and Friday stay around the same, minus 14 to minus 18 wind chill marks, so it's not nearly as bad, but it's still cold. So make sure you and your little pets are bundled up. And once again, for today, if you don't have to go outside, I would stay inside. Have a chill day. Take a you day. Because it's cold outside. And no one likes no one likes minus 30 degree weather. Now do we? Now, it's a new segment. What does the Mystic Stormglass say for today? It's said that the glass only reacts to temperature changes and not pressure changes, but I've personally seen otherwise. I personally think there might be more to this than just temperature changes. So this segment will serve both as a way to introduce you to this old times, middle times, kind of middle ages kind of technology, like the storm glass. But also as a way to have empirical evidence to prove whether or not it's more than just temperature changes. Just as a reminder, if the liquid in the glass is clear, the weather will be bright and clear. If the liquid in the glass is cloudy, the weather will be cloudy as well, perhaps with precipitation. If there are small dots in the liquid, humid or foggy weather can be expected. A cloudy glass with small stars indicates, if the liquid contains small stars on sunny winter days, then snow is coming. If there are large flakes throughout the liquid, it will be overcast in temperate seasons or snowy in the winter. If there are crystals at the bottom, that indicates frost. And if there are threads near the top, it will be windy. So with that being said, what does the storm glass foresee for today? The storm glass foresees a bright future for today, as clear water means a clear day, and hopefully, with that, a clear mind. There are crystals at the bottom, but I am starting to think those crystals are always there, because every single day since I've gotten the storm glass, it has had those crystals at the bottom. And if the crystals growing is a big part of the whole storm glass thing, then I can only imagine that the whole crystals means frost thing is different. But if not, then I guess it's technically right. It is freezing cold outside. There would be frost. So I guess it's right. We'll have to wait and see if it is right. We won't see now, I don't think, for the next few weeks, because it is going to stay pretty cold. But once it starts getting warmer, I think we're like back into like, I don't know, positive numbers for a change. We're not just staying in the negatives all the goddamn time. Maybe then we'll finally see some change. But until then, I have to take the Mystic Stormglass's word. Our Lori exclusive news segment is now Baby, Baby, Baby O. Tonight from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m., stop by Wilf's for some Justin Bieber-themed trivia night. Baby is the only song I know from him, hence the introduction. I would do awful at that trivia, but if you know Bieber, definitely stop by. If trivia night isn't your thing, make sure to touch down at Wilf's tomorrow night for some Super Bowl-themed bingo. From 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., stop by for some fun bingo and a chance to see the Yates Cup that our Golden Hawks won. Winners receive a Coca-Cola-themed cornhole set, whatever a cornhole set is. The Headphone Disco makes a comeback. January 28th from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m., stop by the turret for a fun Headphone Disco-themed night. Not my thing, personally. I tried it out during orientation week. I couldn't really get with it. I much prefer there being, like, an actual live singer there, like a proper concert. But if it's your thing, definitely go check it out. It's free. No sign-up is required. You show up, get your headphones, and have some fun. Men's hockey comes back tomorrow. They versus Waterloo at the Sun Life Financial Arena, Waterloo Memorial Recreation Complex at 11 a.m. Both women's and men's basketball versus Waterloo at the Athletic Complex Gym tomorrow. Women's at 6 p.m., men's at 8. Let it be known, when reversing Waterloo, that the party school will always reign supreme against the smart school. There's a reason we're called the party school. Men's hockey returns yet again on Saturday. They versus Ontario Tech at the Sun Life Financial Arena, Waterloo Memorial Recreation Complex at 7 p.m. Get your tickets for all of those games at laurier.universitytickets.com. I repeat, that's laurier.universitytickets.com. I got two last remarks for you before we end the show. First off, I would like to finally announce that the first semester episodes, episodes 1 to 6, are all finally live on the website. So if you're a new fan and you haven't listened to any of those previous episodes, I recommend, me personally, my favorite is probably episode 4 onwards. So you want my judgment, episode 4, 5, and 6 are my favorite, but it's definitely good to listen to all 6. What you want to do, you want to go to RadioLaurier.com. That is RadioLaurier.com. You want to go to show list, and then you want to go to GP, the morning show, and then you're going to find morning show with Liam. You want to play that, and then you can find other recordings of other people's shows if you want to listen to that too. All the recordings for past morning shows are on the morning show segment under show list. So if you're curious on what I talked about previously, some really good stuff, some really good topics in semester one, I can say that. Go check it out. And my final remark, please, please, please stay warm today, Golden Hawks. Frostbite is a cold-hearted killer. Not really, though. Frostbite can develop anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes in the cold, and depending on how severe it is, it can take anywhere from weeks to months to heal. When going to classes, I beg you, please make sure you wear appropriate clothing today to deal with the weather. We have one more day of these nasty wind chills before it is done, so just push through. That was episode 8 of Weather Aware with Liam, presented by The Morning Show, Laurier's one and only weather radio talk show. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to catch next week's show for your weekly forecast and more. Don't forget to follow the official Weather Aware Instagram page at Weather Aware Liam. That is, once again, WeatherAwareLiam. Hope to see you guys follow that account soon. Hope you have a great day, Golden Hawks. And remember, stay weather aware. The weather in the past few weeks around the world has been nothing short of an oddity. I've never even heard of the Gulf of Mexico getting a winter storm. So I'm going to play us off with a space oddity. Easily one of my favorite David Bowie songs, Space Oddity, on Radio Laurier.